Nation number 16427, Major Thomas Ward, Reel 8.
Major Ward, Reel 8. I think you're telling me that you had information that there might be trouble in the Caucasus.
Yes, the story was that, or the information was that the Germans might decide to come through the Caucasus. And into Iraq, to the oil fields, which were very vulnerable. So it was decided that 69 Brigade would be the best to move over there, because we were in Syria.
Were you doing anything in Syria, or were you just...
No, no. Well, we were not in Syria very long. Immediately we heard about this. There was a lot of preparation, you know. There was for me, because the brigadier said, now then, we'll go over in convoy. Let's make sure we are very au fait with the route, and... make sure that you've got the necessary equipment, compasses and that kind of thing, because you'll be leading the brigade column. Well, that was quite a responsibility, the brigade headquarters and the three battalions. And now, and you, from training in England, and... here and there, that how important it was to control speed and so on when you're leading a column like this. Got to realise that if the leading vehicle is going at 18 miles an hour with a very long column of 100 vehicles or whatever, probably the last vehicle is doing a 50 miles an hour, to, you know, catching up. I was very aware of that kind of thing. And well, it was a long period of preparation. This and well, it wasn't very long, but I felt I used every minute to be sure I knew all about it, and also to be sure that. Everybody following me knew what they were doing.
Do you know why the brigadier chose you to lead the column and plan this march?
Yes, because I was brigade intelligence officer.
But wasn't there a transport officer who might have been more au fait with the march techniques?
Yes, but I was told to do this.
Well, you were captain by this stage, weren't you?
Yes, yes. The transport officer at brigade, I just forget his name now. He hadn't been with us long, I think, probably like that. And I think he was a lieutenant. I was senior. I think that was the reason.
Did you have good maps for route planning purposes?
Actually, it was lucky in a way that we were told to follow the pipeline. As we did this, it made you realise how vulnerable this oil was. You know, the pipeline going through desert for all those hundreds of miles. And I just forget the exact distance each year, each day, but it took us 9 days to get over to Kirkuk. And we leaguered every night. It was interesting how we did this. I remembered cowboys and Indians. Transport knew exactly where they should go when they stopped and so on, and took positions. And then, of course, we were very anxious and determined to start promptly and then control the speed and everything. Now, it wasn't all pipeline. There were certain days when I had to use my compass.
Drive on a bearing?
Yes. So remembering the TA days when I gave a lecture on the compass, when I hadn't had it in my hand more than 5 minutes, I did remember also that at certain courses I'd had quite a bit of experience in navigation, and that was good training for this job.
How many vehicles did you have in your convoy?
I just can't remember exactly, but well, you've got brigade headquarters, you've got three battalions, and you've got the supporting
detachments.
Mm. It was quite a convoy.
What was the main vehicle? Was it the three-tonner?
Yes, and 1,500 weight.
Three-tonner and 1,500
yes,
weight.
Yes.
Did they? Well, did they prove reliable?
Because ours were signals vehicles and that kind of thing. Yes, it was pretty. I remember you mentioned interviewing Captain Butterworth. Now he wasn't very far behind me from the brigade. I think they were second after the brigade headquarters, and I saw quite a bit of him because going over the desert and being satisfied that if I left the column, it would be all right. So I had other reliable vehicles behind me. I went off occasionally to do a bit of shooting of gazelle. I don't remember catching any of these. They moved very quickly. But I remember Captain Butterworth was very interested in this. He also asked how I got on when I got back. It was just an aside. I remember that.
He was your service corps.
Yes,
officer.
That's right. Yes.
Was he a transport officer or more concerned with supply at that time?
I don't know. I can't remember that.
Do you remember if you had many breakdowns?
Well, we didn't. I didn't have any reports of many, but it wasn't my concern, really. We've got Remy in the column, and they were watching that.
And you mentioned that you kept a steady speed. What speed did you try to keep up?
Well, we worked it out that I started at 18 miles an hour, but that was hardly moving, really, was it? And once we got right out in the desert, I did actually just speed it up a bit. But it's very tedious trying to keep that. You know, I would think about 20 or something like that, and 25 to 25.
Were you travelling in one single column, single
yes,
file?
Yes, mm. Yes.
When you did a leaguer at night, did you put the whole brigade into one perimeter?
Well, they were organised in battalions. The battalions organised their own leaguer, yes. but then we had brigade headquarters.
Brigade headquarters leaguer.
Yes. Mm.
What arrangements did you make for security on these overnight stops?
Well, the battalions provided guards.
So you had sentries?
Sentries.
Did you have any incidents with attempts to penetrate?
Not that I know of. I didn't hear anything. Mm.
Did you see anything of the inhabitants of the desert while you were crossing it?
The odd Arab. Different to what we found in the Western Desert later on. In the Western Desert, the odd Arab would appear from a sand dune with half a dozen eggs, you know. but we didn't have that kind of thing in going across. It was we were going across Transjordan, of course. We eventually got to Habaniya, which was the airport. We stayed there one night.
What was that like as a place?
It's a very large. I was surprised because it's quite active as an airport.
Did the Air Force look after you while you were there?
Not really. There wasn't much contact. We were just passing through, just the night, you know.
When you were actually on your 9-day,
I would think that we could have collected a few supplies there and so on.
I was going to ask you about supplies, about how you ensured that you had adequate supplies of food and water for crossing the desert.
Yes, well, I didn't have anything to do with that. Oh. I had enough on.
What order of march did you take up?
In what way?
Well, I mean, did you have brigade headquarters going at the head of the column and the battalions following behind?
Yes. That's what we did. Mm. But we tried to keep the units together, the various units
together. Battalions together.
Battalions together. And of course they were under the command of their own transport officer. Mm. That was important, that they looked after themselves but followed brigade headquarters. That's really what it was. Mm. Because they were miles behind, obviously. And of course, it was impossible to sort of look back and see if everybody was all right. They had to be responsible for their own transport and everything.
Did you have any means of communication with battalions while you were on the move?
We could have had, I think, yes. Well, we had our signals following.
But
had
a wireless truck?
Yeah.
What sort of intervals did you have between vehicles?
Intervals? Mm. I can't remember. It soon, as you spread out, that varied because they were keep trying to catch up, and then you've got to have drivers have got to be alert on a long journey like that, and. It was very hot, and although it was approaching the end of the year, we did find that at night it was very cold, and extremely cold in Kirkuk, which we were there over Christmas.
When you were moving, what you said you were anxious to start off on time in the morning. What would be your day's march? When would you start in the morning?
Well, I think it would be, because you had to have breakfast and that kind of thing. Come in.
I think you were saying that in the mornings you had to have breakfast before setting off. I'm trying to establish a time when you would start moving.
That depended on first light and so on, but it was pretty early we set off, yes. Mm. But I think perhaps it varied a little.
When would you stop? Did you have regular stops during the day, or did you tend to keep moving?
We tended to keep moving because otherwise I didn't want to cause confusion way back, you know. But, no, I think we kept moving. Didn't overdo it during the day, in case the drivers got tired, of course. It's quite a... the concentration has to be there all the time in a convoy, and you must remember the chap in front and the chap behind.
Can't afford to let
them get too fatigued. It's not just driving over the desert, and of course it's very dusty in a convoy, so they've got dust coming onto their vehicle all the time. So it's something you have to remember that. They've got to have time to relax occasionally.
You mentioned going that you were on the way to Kirkuk. You went through Baghdad. What did you make of Baghdad?
Well, we moved. We didn't stop going through Baghdad.
Just drove through it.
Drove through it. But, yes, because I was in the leading vehicle going through.
You had to find your way. Then.
With the military police helping, of course.
Were they from your column or were they local to Baghdad?
No, they were our lads who had gone forward with us. And the public spit on us as we went through. I remember that very clearly. After we got through Baghdad, we actually it was time to leaguer for the night. And this was tented accommodation, which had been prepared in advance for us. And the thing I remember about that was I went into my tent to get something after we'd arrived, and a hyena walked through. Now, we were warned about this wretched animal, and of course they were wild, and possibly had rabies and so on. So that wasn't a very pleasant sight, but it went straight through my tent, but didn't trouble us again. But they were around, obviously, and that was a matter for concern. Then we went up to Kirkuk. The roads were dangerous when they were wet. We did actually have one day when we drove on wet roads and we slipped all over the place.
This was a mountain road.
That's right, because they were repaired with oil, you know, oil slurry, obviously, which was very slippery indeed. That's something we learned very quickly. But finally got to Kirkuk and went into a tented camp. And by that time, we were very near Christmas, I remember.
Did you notice any difference in the character and behaviour of the local population in the Kirkuk area?
They did. They were not. I don't know the way to describe it. Is that they didn't seem to be very much concerned that this was happening.
So you didn't have hostility such as you had encountered in Baghdad?
No, no. Well, we didn't. I don't know about the battalions, but I'm sure they didn't, because I think they had more sense. We went there to defend them. Or not to defend them, to defend the oil. I suppose we were regarded as intruders. But I don't know. I suppose those who knew a bit about it, I wonder if they preferred us rather than the Germans, because they expected that the Germans might be coming through. In fact, they didn't come through the Caucasus. So we went all that way, spent Christmas under canvas, and it's one I won't forget, because when we wakened up, we had to chip our way out of the tents. It was as cold as that.
The tents were frozen, were they?
Yes. And what was noticeable was that every 6 yards we had a petrol can put in the ground, because if you wish to relieve yourself, you had to do it immediately. That was that kind of situation. So it was very, very cold. And we were rather relieved when they said, well, we're going back.
Did you do anything while you were in the camp at Kirkuk?
Not really, no.
You were just in waiting in case anything happened.
That's right. But obviously the battalions were you know, alert to defend themselves if anything happened.
Do you remember if you had any briefings on the state of politics in Iraq and the political inclinations of the Iraqi army?
Well, we got we kept getting literature on the peasants and people in control in Baghdad and so on, and just general information on the country, which was quite useful, but I don't think we worried too much about that.
Do you remember hearing anything about developments in Persia?
Well, we knew about it, yes. But it was all part of the area, really, as far as we were concerned. I mean, they're next door, aren't they?
How much warning did you have that you were going back to Syria?
Oh, very little, because we expected it any time, really. And the journey back was uneventful, really, just boring.
Did you conduct it in the same way as the outward journey?
Yes. Seemed a long way to go.
Did you go back to the same part of Syria, back to Baalbek?
Not quite, but we did stay in Syria just for a while.
What did you make of Syria?
Well, from an interest point of view, those who were interested in ruins and so on, I took a great interest in Baalbek and the ruins and so on. But the Syrians themselves, they were quite friendly. Actually, as soon as we arrived, I quickly went on a course to, I was sent on a course to Tel Aviv. Now that was photographic, interpretation of their photographs and so on. And then shortly after that, I went on another course, and that was the first support course, which was very interesting. Now this was the beginning of preparing me for the ALO's job, I think. But obviously it was.
Now I seem to remember you'd already done one course on photographic interpretation when you were in England.
In England, yes. Yeah.
Did the course you did at Tel Aviv build on that, or did it go over the same ground, or did it teach you new things?
Actually, it concentrated more on desert, because that's where we were going. We were going into the Western Desert.
How long did the course last?
Oh, I can't remember.
Do you remember what you actually did on it?
On the photographic course?
Yes.
Well, it was all looking at photographs and this kind of thing. Oh, and there, yes, we flew around. We flew and looked at the desert, yes, from an aircraft, which was important. That's what we were going for.
So it was practical exercises?
It was, yes.
Did you have lectures as well, or was it mainly?
Oh, yes, we had lectures, yes. Mm. But it also included reconnaissance and that kind of thing. What to report, what to spot. That's why we went on these. It was a preparation, really, for briefing and debriefing.
Air crews
and so on.
Was this a course done by the Army or by the Air Force or by a mixed staff?
I think that was mainly the Air Force. It must have been.
Do you remember how many of you there were on the course?
Oh, the photography course, I think about a dozen, I think. The Army Air Support course, about the same, perhaps.
Going on to the Army Air Support course, Do you remember anything in particular that they taught you on that?
What I do remember is I was intensely interested in it. The thought of close support from the Air Force. We hadn't really seen much of the Air Force in the Army. But, well, not a correction. We'd been in on the ground when the Battle of Britain was fought. Now, I was that we all remembered very much because we were in the, on the south coast, and of course they flew over. Yes, we'd seen a lot of the Air Force, and we knew how magnificent the RAF had been. And we were told that the Desert Air Force was developing, and this was part of the beginning of the development, of course. And but then we didn't know that Montgomery was coming then, because it was before his time.
Did you think at all when you were on this course, you know, that you yourself had suffered under air attack by the Luftwaffe on your way to Dunkirk? Do you think that had any impact on your thinking?
Well, we didn't see any of our own aircraft at Dunkirk.
No, but I mean, the Germans have been doing to you at Dunkirk what you subsequently did to the Germans, haven't they?
Yes.
I just wondered whether that had impressed you with the importance of close air support, if it could be arranged.
Well, it could have been. I never thought of that. Yes. Ah. Yes, yes. Yes, it could have done, because I was intensely interested in this. Yes, and thinking back, the Germans had started close support long before we did. Yes, they did, because we'd had a taste of it.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. I never thought of that. Yes.
But had you seen aerial combat over the south coast when you were...
Oh, yes.
You'd seen the Air Force... The fighting off the Luftwaffe.
Oh, yes, yes. We'd been near airfields in the in Surrey and wherever we were, and you know, the squadrons were very busy, always taking off and landing. And then, of course, the Germans increased their. The raids on the various areas. Yes, we were there to witness that from the ground. Of course, at the time, when we were in the Middle East, we were much safer than they were in London at the time. And Coventry and Hull. We were worried about our families.
Were you able to keep in touch regularly with home?
Do you mean through the post? Or?
Yes.
The letters came through quite well, yes. Yes. I got the job of censoring letters going out.
Was that letters just from brigade?
The brigade headquarters.
Brigade HQ.
Yes.
Was that an onerous duty? Did you have to do a lot of censoring, or were the soldiers generally sensible in what they wrote?
Well, there were. I was always, as brigade intelligence officer, I was always very. Careful to make sure they remembered the importance of not giving our positions away and that kind of thing. But it had to be censored. Yes, I didn't like reading their letters, but I got used to it. I don't think I rejected many, and hardly any really.
So they were conscious of the need for security?
They knew I was doing it, and I was embarrassed to do it, really. But it had to be done, and so in the battalions it had to be done, and that kind of thing. But, careless talk is dangerous, isn't it?
Careless writing is even more dangerous.
Absolutely, yes.
Now, on this air cooperation course, again, was that an Air Force course or an Army course or a mixed effort, do you recall?
I think it must have been an Air Force course because the personnel were mostly Air Force, I think.
Did it strike you at the time that Air Force officers had a different outlook or approach or temperament to Army officers, or did they seem the same?
Well, I don't know if it struck me at the time, but the answer to that question is, no, they are a bit different. Now, the reason is that in the Air Force, you're involved for a few minutes to a few hours, then you go back home. I know you're on standby or anything like that, but the Army are probably in discomfort in the particular position or whatever the whole time because they're there.
And in the field.
In the field. There's that difference. So the Air Force, they're more carefree and they're all for a party in the night, in the evening and that kind of thing. But, well, Army don't get that opportunity if they're in the area of operation, which is, if you like, it's always, they're always, if they're in the front line, of course, they're always liable to be shelled any time or anything like that. The Air Force, bless them, they go home and they don't have that in control.